January 31st. We have with us this morning Senator Hamilton, Senator Thomas, Senator Dyson, co-chairman
Stedman.
And coming in the door, Senator Olson and Senator Huggins. I'd like to remind everybody that they should turn off their cell phones. Cell phones are disruptive, and we need to make sure that the flow of the committee is very smooth. The purpose of today's meeting are twofold. First, we're going to be hearing from Karen Rayfield, the Director of the Office of Management and Budget, for an overview on the governor's fiscal year 08 budget. And then we're going to be hearing from David Teal, the Director of the Legislative Finance Division, for his perspective on the take on the governor's proposed operating budget. But before we begin, a couple of housekeeping matters. As you know, it will be some time, probably about 40, 45 days before we get the formal budget amendments from the administration that will include the adjustments or reductions as a result of the memo on the $150 to $168 million in reductions. But this should not stop the subcommittee members from going ahead with their preliminary work on the subcommittees on overviews, so that we will be ready to jump into the budget process once the amendments from the administration come forward. Are there any questions regarding this from members? Senator Stedman, you have any questions? Any members from questions from other members of the committee? Senator Stedman.
Maybe, Mr. Chairman, maybe before we get started, just walking back in the audience and looking back, we have before us a projector and a screen. We're trying to work out some changes, so we'll probably do some more modifications to make it easier for the audience to follow the chairman, and then we'll figure out how we're going to do this so the chairman and stuff can see as we modernize this room a little bit and still keep the historic tone of it. Thank you.
Yes, and during the two presentations, we're going to be a little bit informal and allow the members to ask questions as the presentations are being made. With that, I think I'll just turn it over to David Teal for his presentation. I mean, Karen Rayfield for her presentation. Karen, can you state your name and for the record?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, good morning. My name is Karen Rayfield. I'm the Director of the Office of Management and Budget. I'm very pleased to be here this morning to talk with you about the governor's proposed FY 2008 operating and capital budget package. If you would allow me, sir, I would like to introduce the OMB staff to you. Many of you know them, some of you do not, and some of you have new staff, so it might be important for you to know who these folks are, because they will be attending many of your meetings, and they can provide a valuable resource to you if you need them. We have, I have seven budget analysts on staff, and as I call their name, I'd like to ask them to stand up since they're behind me and I cannot see them. Karen Elliott, Steve Hildebrand, Tula Marquardt, Mary Sutton, Kim Mosseth, Mike Crabb, and Lena Simmons. So that's the budget staff for you. Also, we have a management analyst, Joellen Hanrahan. Many of you know Joellen because she has done an incredible amount of work on our performance-based budgeting, the missions and measures frameworks that we've been using for several years now. We're doing a much better job incorporating that into our budget development process and working with departments and training to make that work better for all of us. So Joellen's played a big role in that. We have an auditor on staff, Diane Burnham. She works with many of our agencies and departments in program reviews and audit work. Two policy analysts, John Boucher and Jack Kreinhitter. And finally, the person who keeps the whole thing going is our chief budget analyst, Joan Brown. And she knows what needs to happen, when it needs to happen, and where things are. So we take care of Joan. And if you need things, you know who to go to. So anyway, thank you for allowing me to introduce the staff to you. Also, I think it's very important as we go through the process to recognize how important legislative finance is to the work that you do here. I very much appreciate the work that David Teal and his staff do. The legislative overview of the governor's budget I find to be very helpful, and you can tell it's a working document for me, as I'm sure it is for you. So I find them to be a great resource as we work together through the budget process. And of course, your committee staff here is very gracious to the administration, and we all know we couldn't get through the budget development without them. So thank you to all of the people who need to work together to get this budget passed. Let me just turn briefly to the governor's 08 budget as it was submitted to you in December. Her budget goals and philosophy are very straightforward. She talks about wanting to spend less to control the growth of government, of course, to save the surplus, and to live within our means. When she says that, I believe what she's really talking about is looking at the projected revenue in a given year and building our budget within that projection. As we look at 08 revenue, currently the projection is about $3.9 billion in general funds available. That's based on $51.25 price per barrel of oil. We do know that there will be updates to that forecast in the spring, but as you know, every iteration of the budget is the snapshot in time, and that's coming out on December 15, what we were working with. If you look at those revenue estimates over time, they are declining, which is even more reason for us to look for ways to control spending and still be able to balance the budget. Another key component of the governor's proposal is to save the surplus. Right now, we're looking at approximately $1.9 billion in a surplus that she would propose placing into the Constitutional Budget Reserve. That's based on an estimate of about $1.4 billion in FY07 surplus and about $500 million estimated for FY08. And the final piece of the governor's proposal would be to deposit about $1.3 billion into the principal of the permanent fund. That would still leave about $1.7 billion available for the dividend program and inflation proofing. There are several pieces of legislation that were introduced that capture the governor's budget package, and I'd like to just talk about each one of those generally. Senate Bill 52 is the education funding bill. In that bill is full funding for the foundation program and pupil transportation for FY08. It also includes $35 million to be spent in 08, allocated the same way as it's currently being allocated in 07. And those were specific funds that were put in by the legislature as one time to deal with a quarter of the ICER district cost factor study and school improvement grants. So the governor's proposal would continue that $35 million in 08, but does not recommend at this time a change to the foundation program to build that into the base student allocation. So in the governor's bill, the base student allocation is as it's currently in statute at 5380. The other key piece of the governor's education bill is to fund the PERS and TERS increased retirement system costs for school districts, estimated about $207 million. So all of that's included in Senate Bill 52. The governor, of course, would like to move that bill as early as possible so that districts would know prior to their March 16th deadline what their funding level is, so they don't have to issue those notices of non-retention to non-tenured staff. So I know we'll be working with you and trying to move that bill forward as soon as we possibly can. On the operating side, there are two bills. I'm sorry.
Senator Olson.
Mr. Rayfield, can you just remind me what the numbers were for the PERS and TERS proposal that you had in 52?
It's about $207 million, Senator. Yes, it's about $170 million of that through the chair, Senator Olson. TERS is about $170 million, and the remainder would be the PERS estimated costs.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Olson.
Mr. Chairman, there are Senate Bill 50 and 51 are the operating budget bills, including Senate Bill 51 is the mental health operating capital budget. The key elements of those bills include $77.5 million in retirement system cost increases for local governments and about $178 million for state government, and that includes the legislature, the court system, and the university. Governor also is proposing to restore longevity bonus at just under $34 million. It provides local government support, about $48 million for that, and includes an investigator position with Alaska Public Offices Commission. Then, of course, the discussion about the $150 million reductions that were unallocated in December 15 that we will detail for you in the budget amendment process. And I'll touch on the budget amendment process in a moment, Mr. Chairman.
One question that I've Mr. Rayfield, is the $207 million that you have for the schools, TERS and PERS, and which the state of Alaska we budgeted for, which is primarily the responsibility of the school districts, was funded last year. And last year we did not have the $77.5 million in PERS for public subdivisions, but they took that on as their responsibility, and we did. You have proposed that be included in this year's budget. That totals a little over $285 million. Is it the intent of this administration to have those expenditures included in the 09 budget as well, or has that determination been made?
Mr. Chairman, that determination has not been made for 09. I think the governor has stated on several occasions that she's very interested in trying to provide assistance to local governments this year, and has not made a commitment for future years on that particular dollar amount.
Thank you.
We are asking, as our agencies go through a process to advise us on how best to accomplish the efficiencies and savings and to reach that $150 million target, to look very carefully at all of their programs. And the work that we have done with the legislature over the past several years on performance-based budgeting will be a key tool to use, looking for program effectiveness, what results have been achieved, what results will be impacted by any reductions that might be proposed by the departments. So that will be a key piece of the review that the departments are going through now. We have prepared for the legislature a booklet, and I will make sure that you get copies of it after this meeting. This results at a glance is basically a quick summary, a snapshot at the department level of results by agency. But then for each one of your subcommittees, as they go through their work, there'll be a more detailed booklet prepared for each department that will have the missions and measures and those frameworks along with the results at a glance. So I think that those will be helpful to the committee members, and you'll get yours for each department that you're working with. So we'll have those available to you. In terms of the timelines in the amendment process that we're going through now. Our agencies are working on those reduction scenarios. As you know, we did provide some specific targets to departments, although the 10% target actually would result in greater than $150 million. The idea was to at least provide some framework for agencies to work through. They may or may not be able to come up with a total of $168 million to give us some various options to look at, but we felt it would be better for departments to have a target to strive for than to not give them a number at all. We still want to come in with $150 million in savings and efficiencies to bring forward to you. I think it will be a difficult process. Agencies have been working very hard on it, and we will deliver to you what we have by March 1st. Our work schedule over the next several weeks will be to meet with those agencies, work through those proposals, find what's realistic and what we would actually feel comfortable forwarding to the legislature for consideration. I know there is a great deal of interest in asking for us to accelerate that process to try to get those amendments to you sooner than March 1st. I simply cannot commit to delivering those amendments sooner than March 1st, but we are going to make every effort to get them to you as soon as we possibly can. The governor has also asked the university and the court system and the legislature to assist us in any way possible with your ideas of how best to accomplish that savings. On the capital budget side, Senate Bill 53 has been introduced in its current form. It is very bare bones. As you know, it basically incorporates the general fund match necessary, about $81 million right now, to capture about $700 million in federal dollars. Also includes a little over $10 million for match for mental health projects, and also about $89 million for previously authorized school construction projects. There were five projects that were previously authorized. We also, in the December 15 spending plan, the governor identified about $134 million in general funds that would be available for capital projects that she is very interested in working with the legislature on to develop the priorities. We intend to give or provide a list of projects to you with the March budget amendments that then will be the discussion point for us to develop those priorities over the remainder of the session. We also have introduced Senate Bill 61, which is an early supplemental bill. There are three items in that bill. One of them is general fund. That's the request for about $1.2 million that has to do with the April 3rd election on the same-sex benefits. Those costs, of course, have to do with the ballots, providing the voter materials, and then actually conducting the election. The division, of course, did not have that funding in their budget. I believe that they are obligated to prepare for that election, and they will be doing so, but that's why we have the request before you in the early supplemental bill. There are two other pieces in that bill. One is for the Copper River Prince William Sound Regional Seafood Development Association. This entity began taxing themselves for marketing resources in FY05. They should have had an authorization in the 07 budget to actually flow those tax dollars back to them. It's about $152,000. That authorization wasn't there. So the Copper River Red season, I think, begins the 1st of May. They have their plans in place. They just don't have the money to complete the work. So that's why that is in the supplemental bill. And lastly is the $12 million appropriation that I know you're all aware of for the potential litigation for actuarial services provided to the state of Alaska. Those would be funds that would come out of the PERS and TERS accounts. to move that litigation forward. It's anticipated that that litigation will take 2 to 3 years.
On that point, Ms. Rayfield, the last year we had appropriated $400,000 to start that process, and I wonder if you could give an update as to how those dollars were spent and where we stand today.
Mr. Chairman, my understanding is that they are conducting the investigation, and the total cost of the investigation will probably be right around $850,000 to complete that work. That's included in the $12 million figure that's before you currently.
And the other question is, in the submittal for the request for the $12 million, the effective date was to end on FY09, and I was wondering how complete will the whole lawsuit be, and will we anticipate further requests after that fiscal year?
Mr. Chairman, I would like to be able to say it would be wrapped up in 09. I don't think I can answer that question. It's possible it could be completed in 09. And I'm certain that the Department of Law would do everything they could to make sure that it gets completed in 09, but I think there are too many factors that we can't predict at this point. I think it will be a very a large case and will take some time to do.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, on the topic of supplementals, as you know, we are required to provide you with a supplemental bill for the current year by the 30th legislative day, and we intend to do that. Our target, that would be February 14th, by the way. The target number that you see on the spending plans, of course, for supplementals is about $60 million. We have always the same struggles with disasters, those kinds of things that are beyond our control. We're working very hard with departments down to refine those numbers, and we will be getting the supplemental bills to you.
And that target of $60 million is just referring to general funds, and the request, my understanding, the request of the $12 million for this litigation on PERS and TERS, the administration is not counting that toward the $60
million. Mr. Chairman, that's correct. Other items in the governor's proposed budget package: Senate Bill 60 is the repeal of the tire tax. This is the studded tire tax. It's a reduction in revenue of about $1.4 million. The governor would like to remove this tax, particularly because it impacts the safety of families driving on winter roads. So that bill is before you for your consideration. Another bill, Senate Bill 66, has to do with the business license fee. That is would reduce the current business license fee from $100 down to $25. I believe the effective date on that bill would be October of 08, and I'm sorry I don't have a lot of details on that yet, but that would take place in fiscal year 09.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Dyson.
Help me with my memory. Is the license, business license fees, is that one of the departments when we ask them to have whatever they charge their clients be sufficient to cover their operating expenses?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Dyson, I think within the Department of Commerce is the Division of Occupational Licensing, and I think those occupational licensing boards are required to right. cover those costs. Business license fees, as I understand it, are fund more than the division of or the program of business licensing. Those fees are used other places in the budget as well.
I'm sorry, I didn't. Do the business license fees are the cost to the business such that it covers the expense of preparing and issuing the license?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Dyson, yes, I believe it does cover the cost of issuing the license.
So reducing the fees won't then require us to supplement that department with GF?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Dyson, I believe it will require us to cover, switch those funds to general funds. So the discussion will be to what degree.
I see. So it won't be self-sufficient and we'll be subsidizing it in some way.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Dyson, that would be correct.
All right. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Senator Dyson.
Mr. Chairman, the last bill that I just wanted to highlight for you this morning is Senate Bill 54, and that is the appropriation to the principal of the permanent fund. As I mentioned earlier, the governor would like to see approximately $1.3 billion placed into the principal of the permanent fund, and that would leave the about $1.7 billion for inflation-proofing and dividends. And I know that she is very committed to working with the legislature to develop these operating and capital budgets, working with you throughout the process to come up with a budget that is sustainable and provides the services that Alaskans expect. So we look forward to working with you.
One question that I have on the two programs that you plan on reinstituting, the longevity bonus program and the local government assistance program. It's my understanding at the present time the local government assistance program of $48.1 million is not a reoccurring program at this time, and the longevity bonus program is a reoccurring program. Is that correct? And do you plan on coming up with a program that is reoccurring for local government assistance, if that's the case?
Mr. Chairman, I know that the proposal for longevity bonus would be to continue that through the phase out as the legislature had initially proposed to do before the funding was vetoed. So that would be reinstating the program if you approve those funds and phasing it out. Local government assistance, at this point, the governor is not committed to carrying that program forward into fiscal year 09. But I'm certain that she would be open to talking about that with you and with the public.
Thank you. Are there questions from the committee, Senator
no.
Stedman?
No.
Senator Elton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Karen, I mean, we're all wrestling with the idea of the $150 million target for cuts, and so just a request, and if you want to discuss it briefly, I'd appreciate it. It seems to me that one of the problems with that kind of a target is it's easy to run your finger down and identify the annual cost of a program, but there is really no column for savings in the out years. And so one of my concerns is to get to $150 million, we're ballooning costs in the future. And an example I'll use is in the correction system. I mean, if while we have a captive audience, we're not doing substance abuse programs that can help reduce recidivism, what we're essentially doing is we're ballooning correction costs in the future because we're not diverting people out of the system. And so will, in the subcommittee process, will your folks be prepared to discuss not just what the program costs are and what the savings are, but what the potential costs are in the future?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Elton, I'm certain that agencies would be prepared to discuss that with you. In the same vein, I think they would also have to be looking at corrections might not be the best example of this, but there may be some other changes to service delivery that we could look at that we might not be able to accomplish in just this budget cycle, but if we're looking long term over the next several years, are there some ways that we could change our service delivery to at least contain the cost and not get that ballooning effect? So I think there's going to be a lot of discussion about that as we work on this $150 million. And some of the ideas, I am convinced, will probably take longer than one fiscal year to accomplish.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Further questions? Senator Huggins.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And Karen, thank you for the very professional presentation.
The education fund, and I'm reading here where it says eliminates accumulation is part of your presentation. If my interpretation is correct, that will in fact cost us money. It's only been around a couple years. I think it's important we have the conversation about what we do with that, because I mean, you can make a very valid case that that is the beginning of early funding for education. I mean, that's debatable, but that's my opinion. So I think it's important we have that conversation, you know, as we get into this, just from my limited perspective.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Huggins, I think it's very important, and I think that the governor is open to that conversation. Whether you decided to put additional funding into the public education fund for 09 versus putting it into the constitutional budget reserve, I know will be a conversation we have during this legislative session, and I think she's looking forward to that.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, if I might, and number two, I in my mind, the importance, the order of magnitude importance, what I'm fixing to say, I can articulate. Most Alaskans agree that the natural gas pipeline is the milestone of whether we get anything done or not. To get something done on that, if we have a contract and we don't have the transportation infrastructure to support that contract in the timelines that we adopt, we're going to be in trouble. So what I'm really saying in my mind is that if the goal of having a small capital budget or reduced capital budget is a worthy goal, we've got to make sure that's not done at the expense of the required infrastructure when we get ready to do the transportation for the gas pipeline. That takes them out years. We started on the labor force. We got to make sure that we don't lag on the infrastructure to support the gas pipeline. So I guess what I'm saying is that it's important to, in my mind, that we proactively look at the implications of that, and that's part of our capital conversation that we go through.
Absolutely. Agreed.
Thank you, Senator Huggins. Senator Dyson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think it needs to be really clear to the general population that we're not talking about reducing the budget $150 million. We're talking about increasing it nominally, maybe $600 million, and it would have been more if we didn't find $150 million. And I'm a little concerned about the conversation about the cuts, making people think that we're going to have a budget here that's less than the approved budget we're operating on. And that's just part of what we've got to do to keep rebuilding the confidence in the population of what we're about here. And I'm also, so with us expanding our spending, you know, nominally $550 or $600 million, and then I'm very concerned that the $150 million that we want to cut doesn't, I think Senator Elton got at this, doesn't cut some things that are pretty necessary. And I'm hoping we can have a spirited discussion about why are we cutting $150 million from things that we're now doing while we're, in addition, spending $600 million for new stuff or new clients. And that's am I far off on my figures?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Dyson, I don't think you're far off on your figures. I think we just have to be clear about the whole. I think the governor is very clear about her goal in looking at over the next several years with the revenue projections the way they are. We have to be very careful about the funding decisions that we make so that when we look forward to the gas pipeline coming on, we're still going to be having to look over time at our savings accounts. So let's be careful about the decisions we make. Let's look for ways to control government that we can. Let's look for some ways to reduce spending while we know that there are going to be increases that the public is going to expect. So, no, I think that we will have a lot of debate about that, but I think you're right on.
If I may continue. So, and it, as I understand what revenue has told us, I'm not sure that the 07 budget, with or without the supplements, is sustainable at the rates that revenue thinks we're going to get. So And if that's true, then the '08 budget that you're submitting to us is not sustainable at the revenue projections that we've got. And I'm worried about, you know, building a bigger government structure that is demonstrably unsustainable, betting on 10 years from now, you know, and how do we get from here to there? And that kind of a long-term understanding is very important. One more thing. I think 4 years ago, the legislature passed a bill that requires that when the budget is submitted, it be done by priorities so that legislators can see what each department thinks is the most priorities. And I realize you guys are new in the game, and it doesn't appear to me that the budget you've submitted is clearly prioritized by activity as the law requires, and your predecessors didn't do it either. But have you all had a discussion about that, and is there a time here where we would expect the budget by priorities?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Dyson, I think there is a place in the budget process that I'm familiar with where there is a prioritization of programs. What probably isn't occurring to the degree that the legislature may have intended was a presentation of that. So I can talk with my staff a little bit more about how perhaps we could present that more clearly to you. But I know there is a process to do that.
Yeah, and I would appreciate that. And I realize it's difficult. And the previous administration basically didn't do it. And it is difficult. But if you're going to us be asking departments to cut, then what we need is the benefit of their wisdom of what they can cut and not do that would have the least impact, you know, on the people in our state, and what are the most important ones. And that gets tough because several of those things really splash over into other departments. So, as Senator Elton eloquently said, we don't spend a lot of money on rehabilitation for offenders. They can save money, but that may put a lot more money into paying for victims and the courts and lots of social costs, you know. And so trying to do some triage on those sort of things across departments is not an easy task, and I'm sympathetic to the difficulty for you. As the author of that bill, I'm glad to work with you on it, but I really think it's a very important concept, a tool that we need to be able to help make those tough decisions and have the benefit of the wisdom of the people in the departments.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Senator Dyson. On those lines, regarding the out years, you know, I think that there is great concern by this committee on making sure that we have the necessary funds to carry us through till we get the gas line, and I think that there's a lot of concern about locking away a substantial portion of our savings into the permanent fund, because once it goes in, I don't know if that's considered savings, because you're not going to be able to spend those dollars. They're locked away, and I know that is a concern of several legislators in this building. We have Senator Stedman and then Senator Elton. Senator Stedman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to make a couple points that we'll be working on. The savings issue that the chairman just mentioned and the multiple avenues we have at the table here to save, including the permanent fund, but there's the CBR and there's forward school funding and other mechanisms. So we'll lay those out, because clearly there's ways we can save money, even though it takes an appropriation. School funding is one of them, and pick it up in the following year. One of the challenges we have, just for the people at home that are listening, is when we sit down and do our budgets and we're looking at our revenue forecasts, we're trying to forecast for a year that starts beginning of July and runs through the end of the next June. So there's a substantial lead time. The revenue projections change substantially by the time we start and by the end of that coming fiscal year. The issue earlier on the table of the litigation, the $12 million request, I just want to clear that request is coming from the trust. Persinter's trust accounts. We'll have a discussion with the administration and at the table if that is the direction we want to go or not. The other concern that's come up a couple of times, and that's the formula drivers that we're dealing with here at the table on our operating. Clearly, we can't afford the increase in the operating accounts that we've had in the past. As Senator Dyson had mentioned, the $150 million is a reduction on the proposed Mikowski budget, not on the 07. So we're going to take a look at that. We have embedded formula driving problems in our budget, so we don't have as much control, and Senator Hoffman is going to work very hard on dealing with that. And the and roughly half of the increase that we're seeing at the table is due to the retirement fund issue, which we're going to go into more detail, which in effect is kind of a driver, but what I was referring in formula driven issues, items outside of the retirement accounts. We're going to pull those out and look at them separately so we get a as clear an understanding as possible of what we're facing, so we can get to the target that Senator Hoffman had mentioned, and that's to get to the gas line revenues without a sales tax or an income tax. So with, we'll go ahead.
With that, even though the Persinter's benefit package is part of the everyone's operating budget, and under my preview, I'm going to be assigning that portion of it to Senator Stedman to review on overall basis for the committees and see where we're if there can be an overall plan to address the $8 to $10 billion hole that the state of Alaska is facing. We did pass Senate Bill 41 and that with some minor adjustments is behind us, but before us is the major task of addressing the $8 to $10 billion hole. And I wonder if the administration is looking at a plan, a long-term plan on how to address that as well.
Mr. Chairman, we are working with the Department of Administration and the Department of Law to identify what potential options there would be to address that moving forward. And I know that we'll be working with Senator Stedman and with the legislature and looking through those what those might be.
Thank you. Are you?
Yes, I'm done. Yes.
Thank you, Senator Stedman. Senator Elton?
Thanks. And we've covered this a little bit, but I'd be interested in how expansive the notion of savings is in the executive branch. And I mean, when we hear savings, we typically think of the CBR and the permanent fund. And I'm wondering if the notion of expansion or if the notion of savings is expansive enough to cover the idea of using excess revenues to buy down the unfunded liability for PERS and TERS. I mean, would that be considered savings by the administration?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Elton, I think the governor's office is very open to those kinds of suggestions. What she was, what her goal was in releasing the December 15 budget is frame a starting point. She has identified, I think, a pretty clear starting point. I don't think that that means she would preclude looking at any other options.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator Elton. Further comments, Ms. Rayfield?
No, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm just looking forward to working with you and your committee.
Any other final questions for Ms. Rayfield? Thank you. Next, we'll hear from David Teal. David Teal is going to have a presentation on putting the FY08 budget in perspective.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, again, my name is David Teal. I'm Director of Legislative Finance. And I was going to say, while we get ready, I could introduce some staff, but it looks like we're ready already, and I'm going to do it anyway, if you'll let me. I have two new staff this year, Gary Zepp and Billy Joe Gehring. If you would stand so they can see who you are. Billy Joe does the criminal justice agencies, and Gary does the health and social services, natural resources, and labor budgets. And other staff, I think most of you have met or will meet, they're on the other end of the camera, so I'm not going to introduce them. You know, Robin, I have a problem because I don't have a screen here at all, and I don't know how to get back on the laptop. Not that I really need it, I guess. I have no idea. It's fine. It's fine. We'll just go from here. Technical difficulties with the new stuff here. Mr. Chairman, you asked me to put a few slides together to help you and the committee put the budget in perspective. And I guess I think you can do that, or I can help you do that by posing three questions. Where have we been? Where are we now? And where are we going? I think the next slide is the easiest way to understand all three of those questions. Where we've been, and let me explain the lines first. This is revenue. The dark blue is operating budget, light blue is capital, and this shows the either surplus or deficit, which we'll just refer to as the constitutional budget reserve draw or surplus. And you can see that before 2004, draws from the constitutional budget reserve were routine. In fact, that goes all the way back to 91 when the reserve fund was created. What that really means is that revenue here was less than the budget. There was a deficit, structural deficit. Having a deficit like that puts pressure on you to hold the budget down. And in fact, the budget was very flat from 09 through FY05. It ranged between $2 and $2.5 billion. And then it began rising rapidly in 05. And you can see that we've gone from a $2.5 billion budget, operating budget, to a $4 billion capital. So a lot of this is due to PERS, TERS, and other things. But one thing I'd like to say is that it occurs that the budget is a two-year cycle. In other words, you're here in 08, you're addressing not only the 08 budget, but the 07 surplus, and you will have supplemental bills spending or saving a portion of that 07 surplus. So that moving forward from 04, when you didn't know there was a surplus, to 05, where again you didn't know a surplus was going to occur when you did the 05 budget. It was really in the 06 budget cycle that you were first aware of a large surplus from 05. That revenue caused or resulted in a larger capital budget and, for the first time, some savings. The savings were to the public education fund, and savings increases and withdrawals are down here on the bottom of the screen. So that you put $417 million in public education fund. Then you came back in the 07 cycle and again had a large surplus. The capital budget grew again and you saved about $1 billion. In the 08 cycle, you're now back to a surplus. And again, this is money on the table now. The 07 surplus and the 08 surplus. This is about $1.35 billion and this is $641. And that's where you are at the moment. That's the money you have to spend in this budget cycle. Moving forward, you can see that revenue is fairly flat. And the budget, of course, goes wherever you make it go. This increase is at 4%, which looks relatively slow growth compared to the recent years. If we continued recent growth, we would be way up here at $7 billion plus for an operating budget. But we wouldn't expect to see increases of that magnitude because PERS TERS is a big driver of these increases in recent years. And we've now reached the top of the contribution rates, and they will not be causing large increases in the budget. We'll continue to pay them, but not at higher rates or not at more money. So that I went ahead and just used a 4% growth rate, slowed it down, and you can see that even at that lower growth rate, revenue is insufficient, and again, back to CBR draws. So the three questions.
I have a question on that last slide.
Okay.
In the outgoing year, FY09 through 12, in the governor's budget on PERS and TERS, the $207 million for the school district's bill, and the $77 million for the political subdivisions. Are you assuming that those are going to be paid by the state under this scenario?
Mr. Chairman, yes, because what this chart really does is just take the 08 budget as it is, including those one-time items, and continuing them.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Stedman.
Well, while we're on this chart, maybe we could, Dave, you could address a little bit the 09 going forward or even the 08 going forward if we factor out the PERS and TERS issue and just look at what we're faced with embedded drivers that we're struggling with, the rate of growth that would be forced upon us if we basically did nothing to address it.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Stedman, I'm sorry. Did you want to know how much PERS and TERS have driven or what else there
excluding PERS and TERS, if we acted like it didn't even exist, we have formula-driven programs, which, you know, vary a little less than half, somewhere in there. We'll get into that later as far as the percentage of our operating budget that's controlled by these things. But, you know, what rate of growth are we basically being forced to deal with these embedded formula-driven programs?
Mr. Chairman, just guessing, I would say it's probably about 8%.
Okay.
But it's difficult to say that because PERS TERS for school districts is something the state essentially has little choice but to pay. Same is true for the state. But for the communities, there's no legal requirement for the state to pay those. There's no legal requirement, for instance, to pay longevity bonus. So that those certainly cause budget increases, and in the case of municipal assistance or revenue sharing and in longevity bonus, could be called formula programs. So it's really not as easy as it sounds to say, are these formula-driven programs? Because formula programs can still be discretionary, if that answers your question.
So basically a 4% growth rate is a fairly conservative growth rate unless we want to step up to the plate and pay attention and try to attain that goal, versus the laid-back strategy of letting it grow by itself.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Stedman, a 4% growth rate translates to somewhere between $150 and $200 million a year growth in the operating budget. So maybe that helps, because this year's growth is something in excess of $600 million. So it is quite a reduction from the growth rate we've experienced between 05 and 08, as you can see in the chart. whether it's conservative, I guess we'll have to say a lot of this depends on federal funding in the future, because if federal money is reduced, you end up replacing some of that with general funds. It's really hard to say. I just pulled 4% out of the air thinking it was a reasonable growth rate. But I think the point is that even if 4% is conservative, your constitutional budget reserve draws are significant, reaching $1.5 billion by 2012. So that even if you're able to hold the budget flat, you're still facing deficits. And if you can't control the rate of growth to 4%, you're simply facing larger deficits. And just to put that in perspective, the constitutional budget reserve is between $2.5 and $3 billion at this point, and you can see that there's a half, and now you're at 1.5 out of it, and now you've emptied it. By 2012, the CBR would be gone under the revenue forecast and under this spending scenario. But I'm not going to sit here and try to tell you what the future holds. These are just projections.
Thank you, Senator Stedman. You're saying that the CBR will be drawn down by 2012. Is that with the appropriation that the governor is making to the CBR, or is that without that appropriation?
That's without that appropriation. But it doesn't matter, because I think you can see that what we've really got here in 2008 under the governor's budget is negative savings. Now, negative savings only in the sense that you're pulling money from the public education fund, but that savings goes right into the constitutional budget reserve, so it's a net zero. It's not saving any more money, it's just saving it in a different place.
So the $1 billion in the public education fund will be drawn down to zero by FY08, and the CBR will be drawn down to zero by FY12.
Under the governor's budget, if she draws down the public education fund now, I would guess that the CBR would last until 13.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Now, back to the three questions. Where have we been? Structural deficits. Where are we now? A temporary surplus. And let me emphasize temporary surplus, because if you look at where we're going, we're right back where we were, which is structural deficits. Now, you're in the 08 budget cycle now, so let's focus on that. You know that last year you set aside roughly $1 billion in savings, and that went in three places: the public education fund, the capital savings account in Alaska Housing Corporation, and then putting $183 million into the power cost equalization endowment. The governor's spending plan, as we've talked about, eliminates the accumulated savings in that public education fund and transfers the balance to the CBR. And as Karen Rehfeldt mentioned and was discussed earlier by Senator Stedman and Dyson, from the FY07 base, the governor's general fund operating budget adds $750 million. And Senator Dyson, you pointed out that's despite the $150 million increase that the governor's talked about, that would be a reduction from a $750 million increase to approximately a $600 million increase. It's not a $150 million reduction from the 07 level. We also just mentioned that she's would drain the public education fund. Now, without depleting that savings balance, the governor's 08 budget surplus would drop from $640 million to $140 million. And that $140 million surplus is based on three things: achieving that $150 million in operating efficiency reductions, avoiding any additional operating appropriations, and holding the capital budget to 92 million. So let's look at those in turn. First, on the operating budget, this chart categorizes the $750 million in increments from the 07 base. And as we go clockwise here, there's increasing discretion. So in that sense, the school district TERS purse, $207 million, you have very little, if any, choice in whether to pay that. Similarly, the $190 million that's going towards state employees' retirement, health care, and wage increases. Now, these are not the contracts under negotiation now. These are the single class increases like nurse reclassification and some auditors and pretty small reclasses. Nevertheless, they're contractual or arbitration awards. So we put those in as this lump of state employee compensation. Then you have, and that, as Senator Stedman pointed out earlier, is half, in fact, more than half of the total of $750 million in increases. Moving to Medicaid, it's an entitlement program. While you have some discretion and some control over eligibility and other payments, the regulatory process to make those changes is very long, and any change in 08 would be hard to reach. If you wanted to make savings in Medicaid, it would probably take until 09 to do that. Another piece is the refunds under the PPT, and that's assumed that to be about $25 million. We don't know exactly what that will be. Then you have prison population and fuel increases, which are also perhaps unavoidable. So altogether, you have these increments with little discretion totaling two-thirds of the total increase, $500 million. Now you move on to some the things with more discretion. Those are the political subdivision PERS, the local government assistance, and the longevity bonus. These are the three big pieces in the governor's 08 budget where she has, they are contained in her 08 budget submission right as it stands, leaving you with $95 million in other increments to find the $150 million in cuts. So you can see that the first condition for the 08 surplus, which was achieving $150 million in operating efficiencies, is a difficult task. It's more than simply rolling back some of the governor's increments. It means cutting into existing programs. The other two conditions, avoiding other increments in capital, will take in turn. These are things that are not addressed in the governor's operating budget. First is K-12 funding, the base student allocation as...
Can we go back to that other chart for a moment, please? So what you're saying is that under the first three, with little discretion, the $496 million, and then we have the second category, the governor's promises of 159.3, and then all other increments of 94, you add those two together, that's $153 million. So out of the $253 million, we have to cut $150 million, which would leave about $100 million. And then if you take the governor's promises, we can't even fund, we're $59 million short of even funding those promises at this stage without even looking at the other $94.7 million in increments.
That's correct, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
Now, on base student allocation, you know that there's $207 million in additional funding going to school districts. But that money is simply the PERS TERS increases. It puts no more money in the classroom. If you want more money in the classroom, you're going to be dealing with base student allocation, and I'm not even going to guess what that number is. District cost factors, as Karen Rayfield said, the governor's budget contains $24 million, the same amount that was funded last year for that purpose. But that was one quarter of full implementation of those cost factors. If you were to go with full implementation of the district cost factors, that would be another $75 million. Medicaid match is something that you may be familiar with from last year, also called FMAP, which is the Medicaid matching rate. It was scheduled to decline last year, and we had a reprieve on that. This year, again, it's scheduled to hit us for three quarters of FY08, and this would cost us about $37 million. That request is not in the budget. And if you're looking at, well, it got rolled back last year, and hoping that it gets rolled back again, in discussions with Janet Clark, we did discuss things like Congress has changed hands, the power, and that the states that gain by delaying this are no longer in the majority, and the scheduled implementation of the rollback is more likely this year. It simply isn't the power in Congress to hold it back again. Now, again, I'm not saying that it's going to hit. It's just more likely than last year that it really will be implemented as scheduled. I think 8 of the 11 or so state employee contracts are up for negotiation. And I just took a number out of the air and said $30 million increase for those. You at the table have mentioned unfunded liability of the retirement systems. The governor's budget doesn't address that. She does fund all the PERS TERS rate increases that are scheduled, but there's no additional money going towards the unfunded liability. So you may be looking at budget increases here where the governor is coming in saying, I want to cut $150 million. I think you can go through those things that are missing from the budget and not surprise yourselves if the budget goes up by $150 million, not down by $150 million. Turning to capital, as Karen Rayfield said, it's a bare bones budget. It's the minimum level of matching of money, state money required to match federal money. I think we'll just skip some of this because what's really important is what's not in there. Again, it's a work in progress. There's about $750 million in identified needs for building roads, harbors, airports, parks, etc. And we don't know what's going to happen with federal money, but it might be reduced in 08, if not in 08, likely in the future. You have needs of almost $1 billion for school construction. That's excluding the $90 million that you appropriated last year. The University Board of Regents request was over $400 million. Only, well, I think 40 of it was included in the governor's budget. And then you've got your standard legislative add-ons, local issues, community grants, etc. So there's probably an awful lot missing from the capital budget as well. So
Senator Holton.
Thanks, David. I mean, you've mentioned federal funds a couple of times. Has there been any analysis of the impact of the continuing resolution issue in Congress and whether or not that's going to add additional costs or loss of services in this fiscal year and maybe impact next fiscal year?
Through the chair, Senator Elton, I haven't done it. My guess is that that's a good question for the Department of Transportation. But Rob may know more than I do on that one. He's not here, so I can't answer your question.
Thanks, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator Elton.
Okay, so last, you may be asking yourselves, how much can you save, or what's available to spend this budget cycle? And to do that, let's just walk through first and look at the amount available. You've got $3.9 billion. That's the official DOR forecast. That will change or may change with the next forecast coming out in April. And you've got about $1.3 billion of FY07 surplus, leaving you with a total of $5.3 billion to spend. That's spend in both supplemental and in 08. The 08 operating budget is $3.7 billion, and your 08 capital budget's $180 million. And that includes the $90 million that the legislature appropriated last year with an 08 effective date, and then the $90 million that's in the governor's 08 budget. Then a few placeholders for new legislation and supplementals, and the spending so far in the 08 cycle is about $4 billion, leaving you with about $1.3 billion on the table to spend or to save. And obviously, if you're trying to save, any spending that you do reduces the amount available to spend dollar for dollar.
Mr. Chairman. Senator Stedman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. David, up there we've got our revenue forecast of, you know, 3.9, and then we've got, you know, our spending in 08 of $4 billion. So if prices on the projection of oil change by a dollar to the positive, what impact would we have up there roughly per dollar of change in price relative to the forecast?
Through the chair, Senator Stedman, that used to be a pretty easy question to answer. It's not anymore. It used to be a little over $60 per barrel, for $60 million in income for each dollar change in price. And it was linear, meaning that it didn't matter if the price changed from $35 to $36 or $65 to $66. But under PPT, that relationship is nonlinear. So at higher prices, a dollar change actually adds more money than it does at lower prices in terms of adding state revenue. So that makes it more difficult, but the real problem here is trying to figure out what the net revenue is, because PPT taxes profits, and then we have credits and refunds. And we have no idea what those credits and refunds will be. So it's difficult to say there's a rule of thumb now, but if you want a rule of thumb, it's now closer to $100 million in revenue for each dollar change.
Okay, so in a simplified world, which of course we don't operate in, that's pretty close to $4 billion in revenue and $4 billion in expenses with just a slight variation in price. The effect of the Petroleum Profits Tax, which is an acronym we throw on the table, PPT, and the effect on not only revenue, but the impact or potential impact of credits, how is that being dealt with in the forecast, or in the modeling forecast? Are they looking at a positive effect of that credit scenario, or possibly a negative, or are they ignoring it, or how are they handling that in the modeling when it's so early in the implementation of that tax change?
Through the chair, Senator Stedman, I can't answer that question. It's something we will be in Anchorage in a couple weeks for the revenue forecast, and those are things that I'd like to discuss with Department of Revenue economists then, because right now we know they're netting out some of the refunds, $25 million. And I oppose that because I think the legislature should know what the gross revenue is. And then since that $25 million in credits that we talked about requires an appropriation, that if you appropriate the money, you should know exactly how much you're appropriating. Right now, by netting it out of the revenue forecast, it's difficult to you for you to see how much money you've got and how much money you can afford to give in refunds.
I think that's, Mr. Chairman, I think that's a very good point. That, you know, as we go forward in time, that the committee here pays close attention to the effect of that credit, not only in the refunds, the checks that we send back for it, but also the impact on drilling and exploration, which is the reason it's there. But we can, we'll look at that as we go forward, but I would agree that we need all the numbers on the table here and not netted numbers.
I'd agree. Thank you, Senator Stedman. But just to follow through on that, there are, 14 oil companies, but only 10 of them are eligible for those credits. And each year, each company is eligible for up to $25 million of credits. Is that correct?
That's correct, Mr. Chairman.
And in this budget that is presented to us, there's only slotted $25 million for those credits.
Total, $25 million total. That's correct. And that may be accurate. It's just that I have no way of telling, and you have no way of telling. The governor's bill is an open-ended appropriation saying whatever is required to pay for the refund applications is appropriated. It may be $25 million. It could be $125 million. And as I think the point you're trying to get at is that in FY08, we really don't have much of a surplus. As you saw, it was $750 million if you drain the public education fund, $640 million if you drain the public education fund. If you don't drain that, you're down to $140 million or so in surplus. If you don't achieve the $150 million in cuts, you're in a deficit. If you increase the capital budget or increase the operating budget, you'll likely face a deficit situation in FY08. So that even without a reduction in the price of oil, you're probably looking at a deficit. And that's what this chart's really getting at. You have $1.3 billion on the table. Some of it's 07 money, some of it's 08 money. It doesn't really matter which year you attribute that revenue to. You can spend it in this budget cycle. And whether you spend it or save it or use it to reduce 08 appropriations to avoid a CBR draw in 08 is up to you. But you can certainly avoid a CBR draw by spending a portion of this $1.3 billion.
Just for the people following us, the conversation, the 08 production forecast are basically oil going down the Trans-Alaska pipeline, 782 million barrels a day. So if we get more volume than that, that's good. If we get less, it becomes problematic. And the forecasted price is $51.25. So it's a summation of volume and price, and roughly 90% of our budget. So those become very critical as we move forward into the spring forecast. I know most people on this table have that drilled in cold, but a lot of people around the state listening to what we're doing don't. The numbers will be adjusted in the spring forecast. And then we won't really know what our 08 revenue is until a year from the end of June, when we actually have the whole time, the whole clock ticked through. So there is a lot of moving parts just on the revenue side. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Stedman, thank you. Senator Elton.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. And David, maybe you can comment about this too. I mean, Senator Stedman has appropriately noted that revenues are predicated on production and price, but we're also making some rather large assumptions about the PPT and what costs and or what credits and deductions will be applied for. And my sense has been that we may have a better idea the end of March or early April, because we'll be able to see, begin then to see how they're interpreting the deductions and credits as they pay their tax bills. Is my assumption wrong that it won't be until then that we begin to know what the dimension of that third factor is, that factor beyond production and price?
Through the chair, Senator Elton, you're correct in saying that it, under the old regime, production and price determined revenue. We now have production, price, and credits, refunds. We won't know what those credits and refunds are even in April. Now, you have asked last year for a report from the Department of Revenue, but that the focus of that report is really supposed to be, so what's the impact on development? Have these credits, you know, been used appropriately? How much more development are we encouraging through these credits? But at the same time, that report should tell you how much is how much credits or refunds are being offered. So I don't know when that report is coming. I think that it's scheduled for a year out, but you certainly have the option of asking for that information from the Department of Revenue before that deadline. As I recall, that deadline is not on this date, it's before this date.
Thanks, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator Elton. Senator Stedman.
If I could, just a follow-up. We've asked for that from the Department of Revenue to come forward and break down PPT as soon as they have some harder numbers for us, so we can take a look at the effect of all the different credits in it and kind of keep track of that. So that'll be coming attractions.
And just to complicate things further, let's look at these $25 million in credits that are up now. They don't expire. They don't need to be claimed in the year that they're earned. They can be sold. You don't know when they're going to hit. Conceivably, a company could simply not turn in its credits for 3 years, and then they'd all hit at once. I don't know why they would do that, but it's possible.
Further questions? Please continue.
Actually, Mr. Chairman, I think that's about it.
Before we wrap up the, in regard, going back to the PERS and TERS question, could you briefly outline the terms and the rates between communities and the state? Who's paying for what over the past 4 or 5 years? Just a brief summary.
Well, I'm going to try to go into Excel up here if I can get it on the screen. I don't seem to be able to.
Mr. Chairman, may I make a comment? Mr. Teal's working that over. Just as a for the newer members of the committee, there's on the revenue source book on page 18 and 19, there's a table on the CBR. It's kind of an interesting table, varying price and growth of the operating budget, when, how long the CBR will last, but there's those tables are fairly fluid, and I'd recommend that you go back and look at several past editions of this and compare it. And they're online. We also have them in hard copy, and I'm willing to lend them out to anybody that wants to not take the time to download them, but it's worth going over.
Thank you, Senator Stedman. Mr. Teal.
Mr. Chairman, this is very rough because, as you know, local communities, PERS, TERS, is based on individual experience, and therefore the rates range all the way from about 15% to over 180% that various communities are paying. So rather than trying to use the local rate, I just grabbed the 44% that applies to the state government. And again, all of these figures are pretty rough, but I think it's just to illustrate the point that you're trying to make, is that if 14% were the normal rate, and that's in the neighborhood, and that's what communities and the state paid in FY05. The state contributed nothing towards the local community payments. Then in 06 was the first year of the increase. It was limited to 5 points. The communities paid the 14 that they had paid before, and the state paid the increase, if you recall that. And in money terms, the state contributed about $18 million. I don't know what the communities paid back then, but probably something in excess of $50 million. In 07, you again paid 5 points. You picked up the increase, but not the whole increase. You just picked up the increase from 06. So the community's rate went from 14 to 19. The state still paid 5 for a total rate of 24. And again, the state paid $18 million, or 78% of the total cost of the local government PERS. In 08, the way the language is drafted is that you pick up the increase from 07. And that total was 24 points. So it's not that you picked up the entire increase from FY07. The communities, again, will get an increase from 19 to 24. The state picks up the difference, and you can then see that the total local PERS cost is now near $160 million, and that two sides of this. One is the state is paying much more than they used to, but so are the communities. And in percentage terms, the state contribution, or the community contribution, has fallen from 78% to 51%. So is that?
That gives the committee a brief history of what happened, you know, what's happening here in percentages and in dollars on PERS and TERS for communities. And the committee should also realize that is the smaller portion of the obligation, $77 million, when the school district's portion that the state is picking up is $207 million. Thank you, Mr. Thiel. Final questions of Mr. Thiel? If none, we'll be adjourned.